Recently, we talked with one of the co-authors of a report that questioned the existence of a substantial skills gap in Wisconsin. The skills gap is a term that describes a shortage of qualified or skilled workers for available jobs. Where is the skills gap in Wisconsin, and what is the state trying to do about it? We'll discuss that this hour with the director of the Office of Skills Development. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July 2nd. We were contacted by the Department of Workforce Development following our show on the skills gap, or lack thereof, a few weeks ago. And it was suggested we might want to talk about the new program, Wisconsin Fast Forward. So we will. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences with job skills, worker shortages, and what should be done or could be done to get skilled workers into the jobs that need them. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in. You can also email us, talk@wpr.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Scott Jansen. He is director of the Office of Skills Development in the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, I know you were appointed in May to head up this effort. It was created by the state legislature with bipartisan support earlier this year at the urging of Governor Walker. What exactly is Fast Forward Wisconsin?
The Act 9 implementation of this legislation really focused on 3 points. And the first part was to put some general purpose revenue money behind a structured grant program that would be driven by employee demand. There's $15 million that'll be available over the next biennium for specialized worker training grant programs defined through the Fast Forward process. The second part of this established the Office of Skills Development, which is what I am now directing, with a small group of managers that'll be managing the program, identifying what the grant opportunities may be for businesses and managing that kind of process. And then the third component of that is an enhanced labor market information system that'll be focusing upon getting unemployed workers or underemployed workers in tune with skills that are required to fill available job vacancies here in Wisconsin.
What is the why was this Act 9 created? Why was it implemented?
I think simply put, there's a continual gap between open jobs in terms of skills that are required to fill those open jobs and the number of people that are seeking employment. And on any given week, when we look into the Job Center of Wisconsin and the available job openings here in the state, there could be anywhere from 30 to 35,000 jobs where employers are looking for employees with certain skill sets, but employees may not have those skills that are required to meet those job requirements. And that's really what we're trying to target right now, to define specifically in sectors or in geographies or in skill sectors, where those kinds of gaps can be filled through specialized worker training programs.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us, though, some general idea of the types of jobs, these 30 to 35,000 jobs that are going unfilled? What areas are those in?
When I look at the typical reports, it could be in something like call center operations or in nursing or in logistics and truck driving. Could be in manufacturing. We hear a lot about welders and CNC machine operators, but they're skilled kinds of positions, and employers are continually looking to either refresh the workforce or prepare for the aging workforce or have an opportunity to grow the workforce, and those kinds of job requisitions need to be filled.
Lauren, I know you're not here to necessarily debate this report that we discussed last month, this report from the La Follette Institute on the UW-Madison campus that concluded that there really wasn't a substantial skills gap in Wisconsin, maybe in computer technology. It conceded that perhaps there were not enough skilled workers for the jobs, but for the most part, it didn't seem to find one.
And what I'm seeing when I talk to either the economic development regional groups or some of the local groups or the workforce development boards, I think the challenge that we have is really defining where those particular skill requirements exist and what we can do to provide specialized training to sort of close those skill requirements by getting the employers in tune with the employees that do have those kinds of needs. The other thing that I hear from employers continually is the missed opportunity that might be there. If they could fill positions, they could expand workforce, or they could move into potentially new markets or do things to grow their business. And that's what we're trying to understand from the voice of business, where those opportunities exist and what we can do around supporting training programs that can help that kind of economic growth.
Mm-hmm. Could you address the criticism that the skills gap really doesn't exist? It's that the workers who are looking for jobs don't necessarily want to accept a job that perhaps is lower paying than it should be.
What I'm seeing, depending upon the individual sectors, if you look at manufacturing, for example, some of the larger manufacturers have different compensation plans than what a small manufacturer might have. Yet the commonality between the two is they might be working in global markets that have different kinds of price points that are available to them, and there's pressure on their cost structures. Oftentimes, the small to mid-sized manufacturers may not be able to initially pay what the entry level would be in larger corporate settings. And part of what we're trying to do here is find ways that the small and the mid-sized manufacturers can identify that kind of talent, and whatever their compensation plan might result in, could reward those people that bring more skill to their particular workforce.
Mm-hmm. So how does this Fast Forward Wisconsin program work? What's going to happen?
Well, we're in the process of taking public comment on that right now. What we envision is a lot of inquiry from the business community and the economic development community in terms of defining where these skill gaps may in fact exist. When we do that, we're asking for research to be provided with that. We want this to be a data-driven process that's supported by not only available job openings, but also the opportunities in terms of filling those positions, what that could mean for the employer. We're looking at specific sectors of need. We don't want this to be just driven by manufacturing, but we know that there's need in healthcare and financial services, in IT, beyond manufacturing. We want this to be sort of collaboration-based so that it's not individualized employers that are coming to us, but maybe a coalition of employers, and it could be something that's localized or even regionally. But when we do those types of things, we want that then to come together in terms of grant announcements, that we will put that out onto our Department of Workforce Development website so that people would understand what the opportunities are for funding. And the grant application process would then result in a letter of inquiry or an application itself where people would define what their needs are, what they intend to do with the program, what collaboration would come together, how they would deliver training, how they would bring together a training cohort, and then eventually what would be the benefits of that. When people acquire these kinds of skills, what do you intend to do? And what we keenly want to focus on, because of the public investment that's being made here, is the return on that investment. So we don't want workers to just acquire jobs. We want them to increase their wages as a result of having more skills, or people that are unemployed that don't possess a skill to get them to a job that might be available. We want these kinds of outcomes to be that there's employment on the other end of this.
So just so I understand, so we understand, a coalition of employers may apply for a grant for job training. If it's granted, then there would be some sort of training on the job or at the work site or somewhere else specifically for that particular need that is paid for by this public investment.
And what we envision there, Joy, is there could be a multitude of environments where the training would actually occur. It could be done in a technical college environment or in a classroom environment. It could be in a shared environment where there's some class time work as well as some on the shop floor, or at a driving school or in a computer lab or wherever else that might be. What we're really trying to do is get people to think in terms of what would be most effectual to get people trained as quickly as possible to meet those needs. And we're looking for the businesses to define what's the optimum way to deliver that training.
Mm-hmm. All right. And about, do you have any idea how big these grants might be for the each effort?
It's something that we're seeking comment on right now. We've also benchmarked and looked at other states that use state general purpose revenue money to fund these types of training programs, and they vary across the board. We wouldn't want the grants to get too high because we want to be able to incentivize things within individual sectors here in Wisconsin and provide opportunities for small to mid-sized businesses to get in this skilled worker training program grant as well. So that's something we're seeking comment on, but we wouldn't envision taking the $15 million and dispersing that around 15 grants over a two-year period of time. We're looking to provide much more opportunity in terms of developing these kinds of skill programs.
Well, we can seek comment, too, right now. Coming up, we would like to hear from you about your experience with the job market in Wisconsin. Anyone listening right now? Maybe you work for or own a business that is having trouble finding qualified workers for current job openings. Would you want to participate in the Wisconsin Fast Forward effort? Let us know your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Kerdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's going to be a sunny, mild day today. We can expect a high temperature near 80 degrees, the upper 60s near Lake Superior. Partly cloudy tonight with a low near 50, and partly cloudy tomorrow with a chance of rain later in the day tomorrow. Again, a high temperature near 80 degrees across much of Wisconsin, except again cooler near Lake Superior. Coming up on Central Time at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will talk about bike safety and discuss how we can learn to work without bosses. After 4, we'll hear just how long it takes to learn a new skill. I'm Joy Kerdine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 21 minutes past 6 o'clock, and we are talking about the skills gap in Wisconsin, what the state is trying to do about it, and we hope that you will join in with your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What sort of skills gap are you seeing? What skills have you been told you need for jobs that you've applied for? Or if you're an employer, what's your field, and are you having trouble finding skilled workers for available openings? We would love to hear from you as we are talking with Scott Jansen, who is the director of the Office of Skills Development in the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. This is a fairly new effort, just approved in March with legislation, and now our guest on the job since May, and we're welcoming your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Kerdine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Kerdine Show. I do want to talk more about how this program works, Scott Jansen, but I also want to talk a little bit about your background. Tell us a little bit about you actually worked in blue-collar jobs in Milwaukee?
In my high school days, yes. I spent 27 years with AT&T as the regional vice president in external affairs and corporate finance. And took an early retirement opportunity and took a position with the Greater Milwaukee Committee over the past 2 years that focused upon developing a talent development network in the 7-county area in the Milwaukee 7 region. And what we did there is fundamentally talked with businesses, economic development groups, schools, post-secondary education providers, chambers of commerce to identify in southeast Wisconsin what we could do to incentivize career exploration and people that were looking at career paths to move into industries and emerging markets where additional skills were going to be required. From that perspective, I had an opportunity to work with the Department of Workforce Development, and when I learned about what was going to be done here with Act 9 in terms of establishing this Office of Skills Development and the Fast Forward program, I applied for that and found my way into this position here as the director.
Yeah, I should have said that you grew up in a blue-collar home. And you saw manufacturing, what it was like for Milwaukee in its heyday, and the deterioration. Is the manufacturing segment of Wisconsin's economy a part of the old economy?
I see much more opportunity there on a global basis, where the manufacturing economy, especially here in Wisconsin, has moved more from a low skill to a middle skill to an advanced skill. What I was familiar with growing up in Milwaukee is seeing a lot of the canning companies and the automotive frames divisions of like an A.O. Smith, where people just simply had to have a high school degree, show up on time, and be willing to put in some hard work and build a manufacturing career out of that. There's many fewer jobs that fit that kind of profile today than there are those that require some other kinds of skills or some kind of technical training or post-secondary education. Much of this has been automated as opposed to just intensive manual labor. And associated with that becomes maybe some computer skills that are required or something beyond what typically used to just be done by an individual manually. So I see it more as an evolution of what's happening in manufacturing in general, that it's moved up from a low entry-level skill into a middle or even a higher or advanced skill level. But the opportunities to compete in the global markets, I think, are very rich. And our tradition here in the state of Wisconsin with a long history of manufacturing excellence is great. The other thing is just leveraging the assets that we have here in the state. We've got an outstanding technical college system that's fully capable of building these kinds of technical workforces. Part of what we need to do is get our students, especially in the K-12 environment, and the parents to support that on the career paths around manufacturing, to sort of dispel some of these ideas that it's a dirty type of job, where there's great opportunities in manufacturing. And oftentimes, the challenges that are there are very rewarding. It's not just intensive manual labor, but it's an automated kind of process where innovation is continually being introduced, and you're moving forward on new product development and some of the emerging technologies. It can be an exciting career path for people. And part of what we need to do to close this kind of gap is also to make those kinds of pathways available to our kids and help explain what manufacturing actually is.
Well, why don't our technical colleges do this rather than the Department of Workforce Development?
The Fast Forward program is really meant by design to be a complement to what's being done in the technical college environment. So where we can shorten cycle time, or we can focus on a specific skill as opposed to what a technical diploma or an associate degree program might do, a group or a collaboration of employers could come in and specify specific training for entry-level kind of positions in their industry. The other thing that I've had some discussion with people about is when students graduate from a technical college with a diploma or with an associate degree or some type of industry credential, there could be some finishing education that would allow that employer to hire people where there might be a skill that's missing or needs to be more refined based upon what that given employer needs, where the Fast Forward grant program could sit up on top of what the output is from the technical college system to ready those people for what employers might need so they can make the hire.
Paul in Two Rivers emails, what efforts are being made to develop the soft skills necessary for success in the workplace? How closely does the Wisconsin Fast Forward program work with the Department of Public Instruction in planning what is taught in schools?
The Act 9 legislation itself identified two components of state government that are the consulting partners to the Office of Skills Development, that being the Economic Development Corporation, the WEDC, as well as the technical college system. Because of my experience over these last 2 years with the Greater Milwaukee Committee and working with the K-12 school systems, one of the first meetings I took was with the people over at Department of Public Instructions. And we talked about the pathway programming that's there and how I want them to be engaged in the evaluation of the grant applications that come in to the Fast Forward program, as well as taking a look at some of the training that's set up that we can connect the pathways for kids back into the K-12 system. So by definition, while DPI is not part of the consulting partnership by statute. They definitely are in terms of what we're doing to bring strategic partners together to build this fast-forward process.
Now, Paul was inquiring about soft skills. I'm not sure exactly what that is.
Oftentimes, we try to define that more as employability skills, mm-hmm. and it could be things along the lines of project management or communication or critical thinking or logical thought process, those types of things. What you see oftentimes by employers is they'll want examples besides just a resume to provide maybe a portfolio or some examples of projects that people have done. And especially in secondary education, some of the school districts are moving there in terms of that kind of employability skill for their students that are there. And what you're looking at is that the educational system is sort of adjusting to what employers are looking for in terms of that hiring process, where it's not just experience and resume, but it's skill that's being demonstrated, and oftentimes the employability skill on that.
We are talking with Scott Jensen. He is the director of the Office of Skills Development with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. And we are talking about how the state is trying to help close the skills gap. And we wonder if you have observed a skills gap and whether or not you are affected by it in any way, or what input you have for our guest seeking input from businesses on how to go about closing the skills gap. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development has created a new office called the Office of Skills Development to address the skills gap in Wisconsin. We are talking about how this new effort will work and the hopes of closing the gap between skilled workers and available jobs. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Tuesday, July 2nd. Have you experienced the skills gap? Do you need training or retraining to develop new skills to get a job or a better paying job? Do you work for a business that has job openings but not enough people with the skills to fill them? We'd like to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Scott Jensen. He is the director of the Office of Skills Development. And let's go to the phones. We have callers now. John in Oak Creek is with us. Hello, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, Scott, I really take an issue sometimes with this skills gap because I know several, if not hundreds, of skilled tradesmen that are out of work right now, or they're taking jobs outside their skill set because nobody wants to pay them. I mean, why, you know, the big thing is with welders lately, and why would a welder take a job at $12 an hour when he can make $15 to $20 an hour in a standard production facility?
So, what about that, Scott Jensen?
Well, not knowing the specifics of the individuals, but it sounds like what was described there in the question is that individuals have multiple different skills that could be in demand by employers, and if the pay in one particular field, be it a welder, is not what somebody is looking for, but they have skill in another area where they could, in fact, make a wage at $15 an hour, it shows sort of the dynamic market flow of an individual between different sectors. And that's part of what the skills gap is looking to do, is that an individual, the more skill that they have that's applicable in different occupations or in different job codes or classifications, the more value they have and the better opportunity they have to command the wage that they're looking for.
Yeah. Not to press the point, but this came up in our last show that we did on the skills gap. Someone called to say, I don't get this shortage of welders. Lots of friends are welders or whatever, and it's just that the businesses don't want to pay the welders what they should be paying the welders, and that's why they're not filling the jobs.
And I see variability from scale and scope sort of factors into this as well. Some of the larger welding operations or manufacturers have the ability to pay higher wages. Some of the smaller or mid-sized companies where there are growth opportunities are looking for ways that they can incentivize. Maybe an entry-level wage can be on a progression scale that 90 days afterwards you show the aptitude that you can increase the wage or increase the responsibility that commands a higher wage. When I'm talking to the small to mid-sized kind of manufacturers, they understand that and are looking for ways to bridge that gap because they do, in fact, need those kinds of welding skills, and they are looking at compensation plans and wage scales to figure out how to be more competitive on that.
Well, let's zero in on that. Let's say there's some coalition of businesses that are saying, just for example purposes, we need welders that have other skills too or something. Tell us a little bit about how this is going to work, this grant application, and what responsibilities these businesses have in this process, that sort of thing.
What we envision in the process is that the business or the collaboration of businesses that come forth in an application would define not only what the training program parameters are, but what the profile of the training cohort should look like. In other words, what are the kinds of people and qualifications that would come into that kind of training, if it be an incumbent worker or a unemployed or an underemployed worker. Secretary Newsom here at the Department of Workforce Development is very interested in making sure that our current clients that have some types of skill sets could be considered for entry into these kinds of training cohorts, so that we can provide additional skills to move people into meaningful employment. The business collaboration that applies needs to have some, not just skin in the game financially, but the ability to define who those people are, what the training would do, and make that connection to bring them onto the payroll. So we're not looking for training for training's sake. We're looking for training that leads to employment. And the other piece that we want to be able to track with this is the people that are in those kinds of training programs. What is their current wage, or what was their prior wage? What is the result of wage or progression increases based upon the training that they received? And we'll be tracking that over time based upon the unemployment insurance wage data that's available to us, so that we can look at the effectiveness not only of training, but the efficacy of what that's actually done to give people the ability to earn higher wages.
Mm-hmm. So you say that the employer has to have skin in the game. How so? They have to match the grant?
There will be some form of match, and it could be in terms of, if it's an incumbent worker program, it could be that they continue to pay the wages of those individuals during the training period where they may not be doing their production job, but they're in training for acquiring another skill. It could be bringing forth training program delivery, or it could be that they would have supervisors or production workers that actually assist in the training. We want this to be something that's mutually met by business as well as the public tax dollar, and that's something that the legislation was really meant to incentivize. So what Governor Walker has set forward in terms of this worker training program is meant to have business define specifically what those skills gaps might be, identify the kind of training that would allow them to make those kinds of hires, engage in that process of workforce training and delivery itself, and then be expected to hire those people once they've acquired that skill, which should lead to higher wages or economic growth by virtue of being able to enter new markets or expand businesses. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the philosophy behind what Act 9 was intended to do from the legislator's perspective.
Yeah. I'm getting into some of the finer points here. Is there any sort of penalty if no hires are made after the training?
At this point in time, we're not looking as much as penalty, but figuring out how we can mitigate risk for that. And part of that, by having the employers to put some kind of match forward on this, it incentivizes them to work extra hard to hire the people that are coming through these kinds of training programs. At the same time, we want them to put some definition into the type of person that should be recruited into a cohort. And what we are looking to do is not just make that available on our website in terms of individuals that would be aware of different kind of training cohorts that are being formed, but workforce development agencies or even the departments here at Workforce Development, that the clients that they're currently serving, to assess whether or not they'd be a good fit in particular kinds of training programs. So part of what we're doing this summer in building the process is looking for ways that we can leverage all the individuals that are currently in workforce development programs to try to cause the fit to move into specific programs.
And when are you expecting to be issuing the first grants for the job training?
We're in the process right now of establishing the administrative rules that would oversee this entire process, and we're looking to have public comment made available to us either in written comments or we actually have a hearing here at the Department of Workforce Development on July 15th. We're receiving feedback from workforce development boards and economic development agencies, as well as employers and the technical colleges and others throughout the state in terms of what their thoughts would be on an efficient and effective process. The one piece that we've encountered here as we looked at programs in other states is they often focus upon incumbent worker training, which is a little bit easier to administer in terms of the cohort already exists in the workforce. What Fast Forward is trying to do is bring more opportunity to more worker to acquire skill set and to engage more employers in that delivery process of specialized training that would give that ability for the worker to move on to their payroll. So part of the art of what we need to create is an efficient way for cohorts to be built. And something that Secretary Newsom has proposed is to continually make available on our website sort of the entry-level requirements of what employers would be looking for to get into these different types of training programs. And what we'll need to do is figure out how to effectuate the people that have a desire to get into a training program and the people delivering the training to recruit those kinds of individuals. And that's where we're looking for feedback right now.
Well, we'll look for the Department of Workforce Development's website link on this program, and we'll post it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up, I'd like to do a little mini job line, an informal survey. Are you an employer with jobs to offer, but you have had trouble filling those jobs because of a skills gap? Or have you experienced the skills gap as a worker in some fashion? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking the weather forecast for today. It's going to be mostly sunny and mild. We can expect a high temperature near 80 degrees, but cooler in the upper 60s near Lake Superior. Stay with us. Coming up after 7 o'clock this morning, we will get two takes on Wisconsin's budget and education, various education aspects of the new Wisconsin budget, coming up after 7 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 12 minutes before 7 on this Tuesday, July 2nd. We are talking about the skills gap with Scott Jansen, who is director of the Office of Skills Development in the Department of Workforce Development. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Dave in Milwaukee is our next caller. Hello, Dave.
Hey there, man.
Yes, go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to call in. This is the kind of route I went. I ended up, and there's such a push in high schools, get a four-year degree. Went to college, got a four-year degree, couldn't find a job, solid-paying job. Ended up going back to school for a one-year technical degree for welding. And I got a great job within a couple weeks of graduating from that. Now this fall, I'm going to be going back to school for a more specified degree in engineering. So if I could go back or give any advice for people getting out of high school, go to technical school, get a job right away. I mean, at this point, I would already have 8 years of experience in already. You can always go back to school if you get in a good job. They'll pay for you to further your education because that'll help them out in the long run. And I'd just like to hear your guest thoughts on that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Scott Jansen.
I think what was just described there is a perfect example of what the legislature and the governor envisioned in putting forth the fast-forward legislation. The point that was made about having our students in their high school years looking at what the world of work is going to mean to them, where their interests may lie, and the pathway to get to specific jobs, it may or may not entail a four-year degree process. What we've also experienced is that many kids and many parents don't understand the value of technical education and the ability of our technical colleges to not only provide the one-year diploma that was just talked about or a two-year associate degree, but how that education can lead to employment but can also be leveraged or articulated into a four-year degree. So where you might start off in a two-year degree program in a technical college that looks at network IT skills, those credits could transfer into a four-year degree program to lead you into a computer software, computer engineering kind of degree, which opens up a vast array of job opportunities to that individual based upon the skill sets they continue to acquire. The other thing I would like to just reinforce there is the thought of continual learning. So once you get that job, we'd encourage people to keep taking advantage of continual educational opportunities to build their personal value. And that's something Secretary Newsom is making available to people continually throughout the workforce development arena, is continuing to say that when you get onto that pathway, you need to continue to build your skill sets that you provide more value to your employer and give yourself more opportunity for job advancement based upon the skills you continually acquire. So part of what we're trying to do in Fast Forward is also implicitly reinforce the value of education and what the development of skills means to the individual in terms of job opportunities and increasing the visibility to other job opportunities you may not have initially envisioned.
Remind us, Scott Jansen, what are the jobs of the future? I know we're talking somewhat right now of filling available jobs right now, but the jobs of the future, where should people have those skills?
If you take a look at some of the functional areas that play out in multiple different sectors, IT, application development, you see that many different businesses are moving into e-commerce platforms. You're seeing a lot of business that's transacted off of mobile phones. There's a great need right now for people in information technologies to apply those app development concepts into these new e-commerce kinds of platforms. So where a lot of retail sales might be moving to is internet-based traffic. Well, in order to provide those kinds of services, we need people that have the ability to build those kinds of applications. And that gets into graphic design and web design and marketing based upon where business is moving to. So where we may not be hiring as many people in retail sales when people go to a store, if the mobile platform or the e-commerce platform has not been built, businesses can't transition into that end of commerce. And those are some of the emerging markets that are continuing to open.
Let's take a call from Jerry in Green Bay. Hello, Jerry.
Hi, Joy. My name is Jerry, as I said, and I'm a registered nurse. I'm curious what the program is going to see in terms of healthcare, what sort of things might be developed for people in healthcare, what is needed. I myself went from being a staff nurse into management, partially because of some injuries. But I'm seeing in healthcare a lot of nurses sort of getting out of the profession as they age, and I'm just curious what the program might do for healthcare.
When we look at the available jobs on the Job Center of Wisconsin website, registered nurses continually shows up as one of the highest demand areas here in the state of Wisconsin. What we would hope would happen based on those needs is that healthcare providers would take a look at existing education and what the job requirements might be in terms of where these openings are not being filled and come forward in terms of recommendations or proposals in terms of any kind of fast-forward training program that would identify what those skill needs are and figure out what the right kind of student. It could be somebody that's already in the healthcare profession that would be upskilled to fill that registered nurse title. But that's where we're looking for business to leverage what Fast Forward is putting forward. It's not that we're the thought leader in terms of what needs to be defined for a training program, but we're making this available so that businesses can come together and say, now that there's this kind of program, how can we develop customized training programs to sort of meet those skilled needs? Registered nurse is a great example of where we'd be looking for somebody to come forward with some ideas.
Yeah, what safeguards are in place, or what thought has been given to the phenomenon of, hey, we need this type of worker, the nurse, for example, or the IT worker, for example, but then a gazillion people get education or training in that particular field and create a bubble of some sort?
One thing that we're looking to do is, in our inquiry process, when we receive an inquiry regarding potential training programs, we will have the tech college system and the workforce development boards and the Economic Development Corporation to serve as sort of a review panel for us to take a look at the demand that's currently taking place inside of educational systems, look at the curriculum that's available or the programs that are available, where the employer might be directed into an existing training source already or into a candidate pool they should be considering. So we're not looking to replicate something with Fast Forward investment money. We're looking to complement and sort of fit the niche of something that's not being offered. But we said that we want this to be demand-driven and data-supported. So if there's already a glut of workers or skills that are available, it could be that we want to take that employer and introduce them to where that talent might already exist that they can make the hire before we go forth and create a program that would actually create additional supply of skilled workers that may not be needed.
So what are the next steps? How are you planning the next few months?
The next few months we'll be finalizing the administrative code process, and we will seek to have that approved by the legislature early fall. We hope to be able to open up our doors in terms of receiving grant applications as early as October. We would love to be able to start issuing money in the fall of this year and having training programs that are available to people by the end of 2013. A lot of work required in terms of the systems being developed so that we can manage this process through the Department of Workforce Development. Building a lot of collaboration outside of industry. I'm continually speaking with the Economic Development Corps and Chambers of Commerce to get them thinking in terms of what kind of skills gap training would help them identify workers that would meet their open job requisitions. So that thought leadership is a big thing this summer. Setting up the administration on this and the systems is a big piece, as well as getting approval on the administrative rules that will provide oversight to the process.
Yeah, and how confident in our final less than a minute are you that this is going to bridge or close the skills gap in Wisconsin?
I think what it does is it opens a conversation around workforce development that brings everybody to the table into a common understanding of what opportunity resides there. It's the first investment of state tax dollars into this workforce development process. It's meant to complement other programs that are there, and I truly believe that we've got a vast array of resources that we can align to better provide training to develop that skilled workforce of the future.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Scott Jansen is the director of the Office of Skills Development in the Department of Workforce Development. Thanks to Rob and Sherry for producing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air direction and to Justin Williams for on-air production. And thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, we will talk about dirty beaches in Wisconsin, and we will also talk about protecting ourselves from skin cancer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.